Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Project. This day, February 11th, 2012. Taking care of Earth, taking care of people, and sharing surplus. I'm your host, James Kozlik. Today, we're fortunate. We have two guests. This should be a fun show. We have call-in numbers. You can call the 800 number at 888-627-6008. If you want, line one is 530-327-7602. There's a couple other lines. Line two, 530-413-4522. And 530-413-5011. You can go to bbsradio.com/permaculture project/, and that'll take you right to the airways. And you can join in on the discussion with questions, comments. This project is a permaculture project. It's meant to be a network sharing ideas and concepts, information, and doing something with it. Last week, our guests were Donna Willoughby and Gabby White from Laleke, an intentional permaculture community in Hawaii. And we were joined by one of the members, Bernie, who happened to be an 80-year-old engineer living sustainably at Laleke, off-grid. And he contributes his skills and living off-grid experience. So that was a great show. Today, our show is dedicated to building with earth and with salvage. And I must just—I want to coin a phrase from Cal Earth. What this show is all about today. It's on one of their banners, on one of their pages. It says "Earth, Art, and Architecture," and that's what's going on today. Our special guests today are Ian Lodge and Bridget Butler of Cal Earth Institute. Are you folks there?
Hi.
Hi, Bridget. Hi, Ian.
Hello.
And also we have Brad Kittle of Tiny Houses in Texas. Brad, are you there?
I'm here.
Terrific. All right. Well, I'd like to get started. Let's get started with Cal Earth. Just a little history. If Ian or Bridget, you want to start in a little bit of history about Cal Earth, a little background?
Yes, Cal Earth has been doing its work for 20 years. And it is the work of architect Nada Khalili, who was doing this work that is searching for solutions for affordable, natural housing for as many people as possible for really the latter half of his career. So probably the work of Khalili goes back 30, 35 years. And in the last 20 years, we've built an institute in Southern California where we teach and continue to do research and development in the service of architecture for humanity.
All right. Terrific. I'm a little fascinated, Ian and Bridget. I'd like maybe Ian first and then Bridget. Now, Nadar has passed on in 2008, and I'm just curious what inspired you to continue Nadar's vision and keep the Institute going?
I think that the Institute, that there's a lot of energy around Cal Earth and around the work that Nada did. And it's sort of like the flywheel effect, you know, in energy terms. This thing was moving. And when Nada passed away, it was being quite illogical. It, you know, there was a few of us that were around at the time that had studied with Nada and who kind of felt that we had a sense of what he was trying to do. And so this group of us coalesced following Nada's passing, and just naturally started to make sure that the place was working and going forward and growing. So it was just sort of very natural, and I think Cal Earth tends to just drive its own agenda more than any one particular person. So we're sort of observing, Jim. We're using the permaculture premise of first observation. And so we just kind of follow it, really. It's funny.
Yeah, I agree with Ian. And for me also personally, I first came to CalEarth because I was seeking a way to live sustainably. I was seeking to be empowered, and I was seeking a knowledge to be able to learn how to build a home, which is something that I never thought that I never imagined that I could do. And in, as you know, Jim, once you come here, it's just the experience of being in these structures, and my personal experience with Nara Khalili, and his widow Ileana Khalili, and the work itself compelled me to make sure that I did anything that I could do, whatever was asked of me, to continue this work to move forward. It wasn't, I didn't think twice about it, you know. As Ian said, it was just sort of organic, and natural tendency for all of us who were here at the time, all of the apprentices, to rally together and to keep, you know, Nader's dream, his goal, and his work alive. And so that's what I did without the second thought.
All right. Well, that is inspiring. We're going to, now, CalEarth is all about building with the earth, and we'll get into quite a bit of that later in the show. Brad, I'd like to get a little bit of history. Let's get some history from you. How you started, I mean, you've been doing what you're doing for, geez, I think over 30 years, hasn't it been?
Yeah, I'm afraid it goes back all the way, really, to childhood, if you go back to when I started digging out of dumpsters. But the whole concept of value out of trash is something that's relatively universal, except for a few generations into the last few generations in our country. And the concept of never letting anything go to waste in 5-6 generations ago would be unthinkable, what we do now. And so what I've done is effectively, Tiny Texas Houses was the culmination of years, and I started off 30 years ago. I had actually converted a school bus, a 66-passenger school bus, into a house for myself out of salvaged cedar and redwood and parts and pieces I was finding off of buildings being made down in apartment buildings back in Florida. Ultimately, I took that bus and thinking I was going to go write the great American novel, left to cross the country, and after college, found out how it was to be broke and general delivery for your address, and ultimately living out of dumpsters and learning that, you know, what people live like that don't have anything. Eventually, I got to Texas, and in the process of becoming a real estate broker and falling into the drinking the Kool-Aid and having a lot of stuff, I decided I needed to make $1 million in order to publish my own book. And then I got caught up in the money and, over years, developed a real estate business in rehabbing old neighborhoods. In Austin, I did East Austin property that were crack houses and turned them into usable houses for first-time home buyers, and ultimately transformed that neighborhood from a bad neighborhood to a good neighborhood, and initially was a hero, won awards for it, even the Entrepreneur of the Year Award for socially responsible category, and then watched what gentrification meant, and I didn't even know. And that's once it's clean and cleaned up. Now those houses I bought for $30,000 and sold to people are $250,000 and $300,000. And so they can't afford to live there anymore. And ultimately the lessons learned is that I can take the old houses apart, use all the parts and pieces, and build new houses that are more efficient and portable and able to handle the transformation of 76 million baby boomers into a generation that's going to have to take their home with them till the day they die and pass it on to their children's children's children, if we're going to stop using everything and importing everything and cutting down new stuff and adding new toxins and everything else into the environmental soup. This gives you a way to build a house out of 99% pure salvage and proves it can be done. And that's ultimately, after all these years of doing what I did, I came to this conclusion. And that's what I'm offering up now, is you can build houses for free and re-energize without having to give up the old.
All right. Terrific. And a lot of your houses, I understand, it sounds like you also do salvage from old mines and
we call them salvage mines, okay? Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is that people don't understand that we have trillions of dollars of valuable resources, the biggest treasure load of natural resources in the world, sitting in the United States, already preformed into building materials, the essential elements of housing your family. Windows and doors and hardware that was made to last hundreds and hundreds of years that our forefathers would have shriveled up in their graves had they known we were throwing away after one use. I put locks on my doors that were built in 1867, and they'll function until we are long gone history. The trees that were centuries old when they were cut are going to last for centuries more, and there's so much carbon tied up in them and so much energy. I tell people my tub that I used was actually, the ore was taken out in the 1800s, and it was smelted and formed into a tub and shoved back in. Porcelain was put on it at 2200 degrees to coat it, and then it was shipped from there to Texas, from Pennsylvania up north to Texas, and used for 100 years, and it's still good for another 150 years. I have a sub-zero carbon footprint with no formaldehyde, no plastics, no vinyls, no VOCs, no fiberglass, no sheetrock, nothing new that can hurt you, and nothing new introduced in the environment. In fact, all I've done is I've created jobs in America for kids to have a future with, and homes that will be consumed as we go through this chrysalis process, the old generation, and turned into the housing for our new generation that needs to be supported in tiny villages that can support themselves of like-minded people. We're in a generation who doesn't want Uncle Sam and Nurse Ratched taking care of us as we die, and Uncle Sam is not going to have the money. So we downsize and in the process create a new generation of no imports, no new toxins, and nothing taken out of the world. I've proven we can do that. All of my life I've spent making this all happen, and now I'm getting ready to create Pure Salvage Living Dollars and give millions of dollars of my inventory to this cause and 37 acres that I own here to create the villages to prove one-acre villages can support 10 people easily, or 12 people, with a common house in the middle, not redundant services, near another one, and each little place has its solar system that goes to a common pavilion that can help everybody out, and everything can be done without having any more stuff brought into the country. We've got enough stuff.
Yeah, that's true. I'd have to agree with you. Firsthand, I built a 3,200 square foot home for my family out of old barracks from Fort Carson, and that was all U.S. grade stamped wood, real 2x4s and 2x6s. And I know I've got a brother-in-law who always goes to the alleyway. You should see some of his houses; they're incredible with the old stuff that's still functional. And I'd like to bring in Ian and Bridget here. Now, CalEarth is a little bit different. CalEarth, we build out of the earth. Ian, you want to explain a little bit of the building techniques and how simple it is doing a CalEarth project?
Well, I do, and I also want to piggyback on what Brad was saying. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
Hi. You know, everything that Brad's saying is so true, and we couldn't echo it anymore, that here we have a technical resource base of materials that already exist that need to be put back into use. I'd like to, sort of share a frustration of mine insofar as the economic system we have at the moment is it requires inefficiency, and it requires new stuff to be generated. Yeah. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And so while Brad may have figured out how to repurpose all of this stuff and make houses that are affordable and that don't require bringing new things into the resource base, unfortunately, until we address the economic system, which is predicated on any kind of activity is good for the economy, like, say, cancer. In terms of medicine, cancer is good for business. And so we have this economic system that that functions around activity, not around ethics. And we have to absolutely have to address that system because the technical solutions exist already, whether it's Brad repurposing things in a more urban or suburban setting, or whether it's CalEarth doing our work with new buildings that are very low resource intensive. Mm-hmm. But until the economic system can evolve along with some of these pioneers like Brad and like Norda Khalili, I think we have a problem. And if either of you want to comment on that, I'd love to hear some views, because it's a
I think I have a solution for you.
Okay.
Give me a moment. I actually have a plan that encompasses creating an ideology, basically. An ideology based on a resource-based currency that's basically effectively a cyber currency, effectively a movement. You're right. Certain things are going to have to happen. Certain mechanisms are in place. And big industries, so long as we have electricity and we have power in the form that we know it, is a monster that cannot be stopped. But all it takes is one solar flare the size of an 1857 event, the Kerrigan event, and you suddenly have everything come grinding to a halt, and then you have to teach your society how to survive on the resources available at hand. If we don't, in this time of need, teach our children, those who want to learn, how to use their hands and their minds to take what's at their fingertips and turn it into housing and barter systems, which are legal in this country without taxation, and a shadow currency that effectively allows you to barter everything and just put a metric to that so you can freeze that trade in time and create an alternate currency that doesn't support war, that doesn't support the banks, that doesn't support the oil industry because it's not being taxed and there's no interest on it. So ultimately, these banks, these resource banks that support the currency are the materials we're talking about, the very resources we cannot find anywhere else on the planet. They are all these old trees, these bricks, and all the stuff we've formed, all the hardware I use that's hundreds of years old. All of these are the resource piles that need to be consolidated every 75 to 150 miles. And those become the banks. If you want to steal my bank, you're stealing my dishes, my clothes, my furniture, all the stuff my forefathers have put together and assembled with their hard energy and resources that cannot be replaced. And we're going to store them in all these giant warehouses that have been left behind and abandoned by the global corporations that have been written off and are worth nothing, and reverse eminent domain in the sense that the little guy goes in through Uncle Joe, the mayor, and Aunt Susie, the council member, and we take that warehouse that's empty and all of our citizens who are upset because their jobs left, and we turn that into warehousing for all the materials that our children can now go out and use because we take it at a local level and dismantle the corporatocracy of the building system that says we can't do it. And make a variance. Now I can use my salvage lumber to build houses with. Now I can use my single-pane windows that are made out of wood that will last for centuries to build houses with. And now all of a sudden my kids have jobs taking this stuff down and putting it in warehouses as we take these houses that are no longer functional, that are obsolete by energy purposes, and we can't take them with us. You need to be able to have in a mobile society the ability to take your home with you for the rest of your life. In California, and they had lumber towns, we had railroad towns, we've done this for society all through history. So now you take it where, as an old person, I need more care. I move my little house over to this little village down here, and I get to have more doctors and nurses that are retired nearby, or whatever the circumstance. The possibility is there for us not to do all this and to create an inventory out of pure salvage living dollars that every time you get a dollar in, you sell it for something good, and you bring it in, and you sell it for PSL. You keep turning everything in U.S. dollars into the resources. These are resource banks. You can't eat gold. You can't wear gold. You can't have it over your head to keep you warm at night. So consequently, you're going to trade it for what? Living resources. So we create a currency out of pure salvaged living resources that are available. They're already here. They're distributed all over the country, just like Lowe's and Home Depot said, hey, let's put it everywhere. Well, it's everywhere already. We just have to take the human energy, which happens to be in surplus right now, and then ignite that passion, ignite that hope that you could have a home for free almost anywhere you are. And if there's a surplus of these materials, we'll ship them out there to where they only have earth and they don't have any trees, and we'll let them have the beams and stuff that we can't use, or the flooring and stuff that we can't use, and we'll create a market within our country. All this is possible. It's sitting there, trillions of dollars at our fingertips, for free, because the big corporations can't go in and take them down. So what do they do instead? FEMA, after a storm, if you come in on the shore, the 2x6s and the 2x8s all over after the hurricane, you're not allowed to pick them up. Why? FEMA's got control. They're taking them to the dump. They've got to be ground up. Why do they have to be ground up? We need 2x4s. We need 2x6s. No, sorry. They're going to the dump. We got to stop this. You can only stop it from the bottom up. From the top down, it's corrupt. So at a local level, I energize people. What do? I tell you, there's a solution at your fingertips. Look at all these houses. You're having them condemned. You're filing liens on people's places because they can't afford to keep up these decrepit old houses where all the good materials are. So instead, you incentivize it. Every house built out of that will never be taxed again because all the jobs I'm creating. Here's the sad part. 51% of our landfills are building materials. They're not being taxed on stuffing those all into that hole and letting them rot. That's never being taxed again. But if I bring it over here on my property, 3% of my personal property every year gets taxed. And if I turn it into a house, it gets taxed. So wait a second, if I'm going to save it from the dump, isn't it just trash? haven't I just reformed that trash? And until I sell that trash for dollars, U.S. dollars, it's not worth anything. Others just bartered time and bartered material. So now I can't be taxed for my house. It's trash waiting to be dissolved, waiting to digest. That's a solution. Why don't we use it? Only because we choose not to. This is the point we're at. If we choose to do this at the bottom, we can change it all. Individually, we can change it. Not from the top where it's corrupt. Not from the corporations, because who's going to get hurt? Global corporations, he's right. They make their money off of new resources with cheap labor, taken in places where there's no environmental cost. We don't need it. We don't need to import it. We don't need to wrap it in plastic. We don't need to use that up. We've got it already. Thank you very much. China, take care of your 200 billion people on your own. 50 million out of the 176 million that are about to retire choose to go with salvage. We choose to drop out. We choose to quit because, you know what? We didn't have any darn retirement anyway. So we're going to simplify. Back to the old days. Help each other out. It's not what you have. It's what you give. It's not how much you have, but it's what you do with what you have that counts. And those who don't will become outcasts, stuck with the U.S. dollar. And when the dollar collapses, which is a fiat currency doomed, the dollars turn into silver and gold. So what? Come buy from our warehouses all over the country, protected by every community, because that's their resources. Come steal it, bring a semi.
I think it's a real conscious effort to do that, Brad. I'd have to agree with you there. I mean, around where I'm at here in Montana, it's kind of resort area, and what happens is you see a lot of the salvaged lumber, old barns and beams and whatnot, and it's sold to contractors building houses that are 4,000 square feet, and they want this Montana look, the rough look, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's got to be a conscious effort, and it could start in a small way. You know, if contractors would just hoard some of the stuff that at the end of a job that gets thrown out and just store it somewhere, that could be a start.
That's the beginning. I built my first bus. Absolutely.
Yeah,
out of the, just the
exactly.
The parts that were thrown in the trash.
We're thrown in the trash. Ian, you really started a whole different direction on with that question. I think it is a conscious effort. And do you have anything to add, Bridget?
Not that topic. However, I would like to talk about a little bit about what we do. And I remember Brad mentioned resources at our fingertips. And that is what attracted me to CalEarth, is that there is a resource that is at everyone's fingertips, and that's the earth beneath our feet. And also similarly to what Brad was speaking to in terms of value out of trash, I think that's wonderful, and by that same token, I think value from what we consider dirt and turning that dirt into gold, or earth turning into gold, as Rumi would say, is the focus on what we do here at CalEarth. There is a certain level of skill also, too, that's required when building your own home, conventional architecture, but with domes and vaults made from earth, just filled into bag coils, I think is such a simple concept that most people can grasp, particularly someone like me. You know, I'm just a gal who was a dancer, and I never even imagined that I could acquire the skills. And I was a little bit intimidated, to be quite honest with you, with acquiring skills to learn how to really build a home seriously. I could do something like that. And the simplicity and the wealth of material available, which is earth, and the idea that we wouldn't have to use our natural resources to create a structure in which we could actually live in, and a beautiful one at that, is so beautifully simple that and accessible that this work sort of draws people from all walks of life for that reason, and from all regions as well. A lot of work is done with Super Adobe in developing nations because of the lack of resources. But everyone has earth, and everyone's able to understand the concept of filling a bag with earth, one coil on top of another until you reach the top, and you have a home. And that simple concept is what we teach here at CalEarth. And of course, you know, there's a little bit more technical knowledge that you need in order to build these structures, but it truly is that simple in concept. And so I would say that I agree with Brad in terms of looking at a new paradigm and a new way of thinking to change and shift the direction, the wrong direction that we're going in now in terms of housing and being able to be self-sufficient and taking care of ourselves and sort of not sort of sucking off of the boob of the government and being able to fend for ourselves. And it is looking toward other resources like what we call trash, which is really a treasure, or what we call dirt, which is really gold.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the only issue we get into with the earth and element, particularly like in Texas, is it's regional, it's elemental in the sense that your drainage and everything are big factors. And in this last week, after a major drought, all of a sudden we had 10 inches of rain in a 1.5 week period. And there are conflicts that we deal with in certain regions where my stuff will work in one region, won't work in another. And like anything, it's going to have to be adapted. Everything has to be adapted to the regions. And the idea of transporting what we don't have in one place to places we do have it. And dirt is not that easy to get in some places, believe it or not, like in getting the quality of dirt we need even to compact and be able to make really good blocks, but then also keep them dry until you get the project finished kind of thing. And they use compacted earth and some other methods down here. Everything is regional, and I think potentially there's solutions everywhere. We just have to open our minds up to it and say, this is the direction we want to go, and we're willing to sacrifice to do whatever we have to make it happen. And I applaud what they're doing and everybody that's involved in this right now, because there's so many angles to come at it from, and that's craziness. There's so many solutions. But the economics of it, like he said in the beginning, and you go back and we have to come up with a method that takes out the Monsantos in the equation and the oil companies. Everybody has the determination. You make it self-determining by individually making the choice, and they all fall by the wayside eventually. Hopefully.
Right, and that's something I'd like to bring up. It's a good time to bring that up. Both of you are talking about building small villages for people to live in. In fact, CalEarth has a real nice model, a little eco village. Ian, I wonder if you can just go over that, how that was developed, what was the reasoning behind it, of starting a little eco village with the Eco Shelter Village Plan.
Yeah, are you talking about the emergency shelter village?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Or the emerging fire village on the backside of it?
Mm. Well, actually, you can explain either or. I know I had the opportunity to do a workshop with CalEarth, and I actually camped out in the emergency shelter Echo Village. And that actually had connected two smaller chambers, was a couple places where a single or double occupancy could easily be had. So I think that's what I'm talking about first, is that emergency shelter Echo Village plan. It had a nice courtyard.
Well, indeed. It was an effort that Nautica Lily undertook 10 years ago or so, at a time when he was dialoguing with one of the top guys at the United Nations about emergency shelter housing. And so we sort of call that the emergency shelter village or the Mediterranean village. And in essence, it's sort of a template for small-scale villages or housing, all using the same material. Whether it's the courtyard that you referenced, which is compacted earth with about 10-12% cement, and then steel troweled so that it's hard enough for pedestrian traffic. And so we have that element in the center around which there are all of, you know, a whole number of small structures, small domes, each of which could be single, double occupancy. Some of them have fireplaces in them. The village itself, I think, evolved organically, and it just expresses the very beginning of what an eco-village really needs to do. In fact, we really just put together the structures, but an eco-village, as you know, Jim, and you know, with our thoughts around permaculture, needs to deliver water and handle waste, and you know, be designed to have a public area and private spaces and so on. So there's a lot to. I think a lot goes into saying that something is an eco-village, and I would probably stop short of saying that our emergency shelter village is an eco-village, but that it opens up the sort of vista of possibilities that could be then sophisticated into something like an eco-village. We have the eco-dome, and right. The reason that it's called eco-dome is that efficiency was the main thrust of that building. Nada asked himself, how could he design something that's small and efficient and extremely affordable? And that structure cost us $9,000 and change. And half of that was new windows, brand new windows and doors and floors and so on. The actual 400 square foot structure itself was only $4,500. And then the plumbing, the function of the apses, that is the bathroom and the kitchen, was situated next to each other so that the plumbing also was really easy, really low cost. And that house can be affordable and available to almost everybody if they can find some old rice bags or clothing or women's saris or anything to create the containment for the earth. Then you can build one of these houses, because remember that the strength of our work is not in the material. Not how hard you can compact the block. It's the unity of the structure and its geometry. As soon as you have something that is in repose, that instead of fighting gravity, it actually is sort of enhanced by the compressive effect of gravity, then you really have something to work with. So again, the thrust of Cal Earth is to keep it simple, is to use what's available, but in tandem with the timeless principles of the arch and the vault and the dome. I think if I weren't to mention that in our talk today, I would have done a disservice to Kalili's work, because it's not just earth architecture. It particularly involves using those geometric shapes, because they enable us to build with really low-grade earth. Anything. You could almost put anything in these bags, compact them, because they act as a unity. And so obviously there's efficiency there. There's an eco-credential, if you like, that's built into that sort of a thing. But as far as sophisticating more into eco-villages and so on, that's the work ahead of us. And as Cal Earth Institute continues to do its work, we are indeed looking at putting in high-efficiency heating systems that are commonly known as a rocket stove, and water catchment, and grey water, and just building in all of these other things that really make a house and a cluster of homes efficient.
Brad, I know in one of the things that you mentioned earlier is that you're working on is creating a self-sustaining village and with your tiny homes, which would, I'm guessing, include some gardens and.
Absolutely. Well, you have to have food. He's right. There's no self-sustaining village that doesn't create its own food. And conceptually, an acre of land with 10 tiny houses, as you shrink your footprint down, you can provide housing for Well, 10 houses, tiny houses, could be couples or singles in a common central house on an acre, still leaves you with 10 to 15,000 square feet for just using for actual gardens without counting the other 10,000 square foot of open space that's left to grow stuff that will still produce food but doesn't necessarily have to be in the garden, per se. The interdependence and the ability to pick those houses up and swap them out so that somebody can, you know, as you age, leaving your home behind is the most traumatic thing you can possibly go through. And there's plenty of studies to show that it's like a death in the family every time you move as a child or as an adult. It's an extreme change. And so if you could pick your house up and put it on a trailer and get to your new location and go back into your house and close the windows and close the curtains, the trauma is seriously offset. Now when you go outside, you're going to face, well, I got to get used to where my new place is, but ultimately you're still home. And we've studied this enough to know now this shell, like a turtle, gives you a certain feeling of protection and independence, and it's something that we hold dear to the heart, the concept of home. Well, I absolutely condone being able to build on the ground and having the cost be down lower. Ultimately, if we go out and salvage and build our home for free out of the materials that we would basically barter, and I'm not saying by any means anybody should learn to do everything by themselves, but if I go out and get the house and then I barter while the windows, the doors, and I have extras, I don't need them, I have all this extra wood I don't need, I barter that for the electrician. And as long as you have a metric in order to be able to calibrate what you're bartering for and what you're, you know, the time you're going to get, you can do these sort of exchanges and make that happen as long as you have communities that support that. And the people that are growing food in their garden will trade for doors and windows and the help to make it happen. Nobody should be able to expected to do it themselves, although I'm one of those people that spent my life learning how to do that. Not everybody has, and I don't expect it of everybody. What I expect is to come together as a community again and to help, by virtue of this, form community through helping each other and giving each other what we need to survive as we get into the next phase of our societal development, which is certainly not what it's been in the last 50 years, I hope.
Now, of course, one of the things, I just want to make a little comment in reading some of the DARS material. One little quote was, "Unity within municipality." And as we build these little self-sustaining villages, I'd like to get a comment from both of you. Let's start with either Ian or Bridget, whoever wants to address it. You know, how do we go about working within the city planners, the city developers, or county? Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be a little trick there. How do you put a little village on a piece of property that you can't subdivide, and in conjunction with what the municipality, you know, already regulations?
Don't sell it. I mean, I've got 37 acres, 40 acres over here. I'm not going to sell it because as soon as I start selling it off and subdividing it, they have their control over it. But if I keep it as my own property, I can put all these little houses on it as I choose. I'm outside of anybody's jurisdiction in Texas at the moment. Although they did annex the corner of me at 3 acres. Now, if I go on that 3 acres and try to build a house, I got to use new lumber or else have it all recertified. I got to use double pane insulated glass that's basically going to go bad in 12 years. All these things that I have to do on that side of that imaginary line. Mm-hmm. But by virtue of having brought water and sewer to my property, I can distribute it anywhere I want on my property. So now I have 37 acres left that I can put 200 houses on that if I want. As long as I don't sell off a single piece of it, they can't tell me what I can and can't do with it. The next argument is going to be the sewage. That's the control they have over you. So it's a matter of having to go in and find the loopholes and everything. And my argument is this. How are we going to change the system? Well, the system is this, Mr. Politician. I'm going to show you a way to make jobs for our children and solutions for our elderly. You're one of those people retiring. What are you going to do? These are solutions for both generations, to give the kids hope so they don't fight on the fact that 20 million of them are going to have to support 76 million of these old people. So we've got to come up with solutions that are realistic, that are going to work, or they're going to have no hope and no desire to do it. So, Mr. Politician, I'm going to offer you jobs. I'm going to offer you a way to cut off our imports. I'm going to cut off all of our liabilities that are coming from taking new things out of the environment. I'm going to create jobs. I'm going to create work, not just jobs, but incentivization. What do I mean? How many boards did you pull out this week? If I pulled out 200, 300, 400 board feet, I'm going to get paid for all of that. Not as an employee, but as you're taking this down, you're bringing it in. Your wife could be helping you. Your kids could be helping you. You're producing all these resources that you're going to collect the rewards for proportional to what you produce, except that the rewards are not accumulated in cash or gold or silver. They're accumulated in life resources that you can then trade with somebody else to make your family happy and give them everything they need to survive.
Mm-hmm. Bridget, you want to touch on the subject a little bit, how long it took Nadar to work with the local city planners in Hesperia to get
to be able to construct some of his structures on the property?
Yes, well, it was, I think, Nader's, one of Nader's missions to make sure that this type of architecture would be available to people who wanted to build a new home made from earth. And so it took Nader, I guess, about 6 years to working with the local building department in trying to prove that this architecture was, in fact, an architecture that could work in the state of California. And being that we're in an earthquake state, Nader chose California specifically to prove his point, and which was that this architecture, not only is it as good as the conventional stick frame, pitched roof architecture, but it was better in terms of standing up against the earthquake forces. And we had extensive testing done to prove this point. And you know, what ended up happening, as the story goes, I wasn't here for that, but the story goes is that during the process of testing our structures under the stress of an earthquake, the testing equipment failed before our structures did. And once that happened, it was undeniable to the local building department that this was something that they had to address and deal with and recognize and acknowledge. And so as a result, we received in terms, which is pretty huge, in terms of earth architecture, we received a permit and to build these structures in the county of San Bernardino, which is where we are here in California. And not only that, but we were issued approved stock plans by the building department to build the ecodome that Ian mentioned earlier, and also Earth One, which is a vaulted structure that we have here on site that you saw, Jim. And so both of those structures have permits from the building department in the state of California. And currently right now in the county of Los Angeles, there is a permitted structure being built like with the Earth One model, which is our vaulted structure. And it was all, I mean, it was something that one would not imagine to have these domes and vaults built with earth to be approved by one California building department. And we have now two counties, Los Angeles and San Bernardino, that have approved this architecture. So
many more, just to be...
Have there? Okay. Yeah. All right, those are the two that I know of. And mm-hmm. What other, you know? And some is apparently in Northern California as well. So although we are not an institute that teaches people how to build an eco-village, we do teach people how to empower themselves to build a home for themselves. And once they are empowered with that knowledge, they have to be able to go to a local building department, for example, and actually get their plan approved. And that is something that Nader made sure that he accomplished before he passed away. As a matter of fact, I think it was a month before he passed away, we received our occupancy permit from the local building department for the Earth One structure here on site.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. I think I'd just like to interject a little bit here for anybody listening. I know building, if you build in rural areas in a lot of states, the codes are a little bit less, you know, a little bit more lax than if you're building in town. And so that's one encouraging aspect of building in rural areas for people.
Especially Texas.
Yeah. Let's see here. Where can we go from here? I know go ahead.
Jim, I had a thought that I think is sort of very much part of the character of Kal-El. You know, we're not trying to address issues at a macro level. We're not, after all of the effort that went in with NADA and the United Nations, not much happened. So the spirit of Kal-El is to teach at the grassroots level, one person at a time, to such a point where there are so many people who are doing this, just as it was with organic food that was so exotic and so weird 20 years ago, and now it's so commonplace. The spirit of Kal-Earth is to empower one person at a time. And we're not urban planners. We're not politicians. And I certainly don't feel qualified to be discussing the needs of a city and how to, you know, interface all of the various systems of a city. But, and I don't think that was Nader's intention. He just felt that one person at a time, this work could spread. And along with that, as you may concur, Jim, Kal-Earth is also very much about inspiration. Not as big inspiration. In his life was Rumi, the Sufi mystic poet. And although I'm not going to get into all of that right now, at Kal-Earth still, it's so very much about opening people's hearts and about touching people on a personal level. Because without that, you see, nothing changes. You know, there are many, many bright individuals who can figure out some of these systems issues and how to interact and interface with all of these things, but where's the willingness? As Brad was saying earlier, people need to be sort of on board with this. And so, for me personally, I feel that the change we are seeking in the world won't come if we continue to function at the same level that we are at the moment. But if instead we can kind of get right with ourselves and live our own life in a way that has integrity, and everybody has their own sense of what that means, and it's a spiritual component. And if that seed can blossom in all of us as individuals, then society will change, because society is just the collective expression of all of the people inside it. So I think it's so important that to think about Nader Khalili simply as an architect would be to have missed a huge part of the story, because he was an inspiration and just a fire. He had a way of engaging people on that kind of level that I think resulted in the success that Kal-Earth has had, because it had that personal and spiritual component, you know?
Oh, I agree. In fact, I'm very grateful to have all three of you as guests today, because I can sense the inspiration in each one of your hearts in this program today to help people, to serve people and show them a way. In fact, I know both of you, Brad, you have an educational program development. I saw on your website, tinytexashouses.com.
Yeah.
You want to go over that? You have a little apprentice program, I think, also.
Actually, we're getting ready to finally launch, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The whole concept, KirstenAverageLiving.com, which is actually the next level. Tiny Texas Houses was the seeds. And I had to bake the seeds first to be able to show that we could do this, that we could prove that we could build a house, that you could jack up at four corners, stick on a trailer and haul anywhere, and put down again and be able to tolerate the storms, have cables in it to stand through the hurricanes and be bulletproof. Now, we've done that some 60 times. We've proven we can do it. Next step is teach others how to do it, because all the materials are in place, already distributed. All the energy is there. The desire to house our children and to do it all is there. But people don't realize their own abilities. They don't understand the energy within each of them to make things happen, to change the world. And the more they give, the more that energy they're going to have. And to teach that, as he said, to get people on board to understand that this is all possible. So our school starts first with the salvage expedition. I call them salvage mines, but the salvage expedition, the first one is an 1880 circa old hotel. It still has the original milk paint, never been messed up. Beaded wall ceilings, beaded wall, all over the walls, beaded board. And it has tungu flooring and never been painted on the outside, original planks that were hundreds of years old when they were cut, that are still standing, never painted. And we get to take this apart and teach people how to do it so that we're going to be filming it and making it into a video so we can try to get this online, because 70% of our followers or better are people that, well, they're women. Basically facing the worst of the worst, because they have the least amount of money, the least amount of cushion. They're going to live the longest, and they have the most incentive to try to figure out how to do something, and they've been the least empowered throughout their life. So first you find a way to show them what they could have. Then you show them a way to get it through cooperating with each other, and then you empower them to believe that they can do it by showing them, by filming other women doing the very same thing. And then the three follow-up seminars will be how to build three houses out of one house, which is what we're going to do with the materials. And along the way, teach people that through offering the PSLs, the pure salvage dollars, that as they work on a seminar, they accumulate PSLs, which allow them to buy the pieces and parts that allow them to later on go on either trade for labor or become part of the village and ultimately, you know, trade out working and building a house.
Oh. And Bridget, I know that CalEarth has an apprenticeship program to go along with the initial certification for the program I took. You want to explain a little bit about how that evolved?
Yes. Well, first off, we do have a workshop that we offer 9 months out of the year, and it's about a week long. And if you go to our website, calearth.org, you'll get the schedule. And we teach people everything that they need to know in a week's time on how to build these structures, these super adobe domes and vaults. Now, for some people who really want to go deeper into this work and who have a desire to be part of our community and help further this work and our outreach program, and who want to learn and maybe go on and teach, or they may want to be sent out as one of our international instructors to teach workshops internationally, we do have a long-term program. And the long-term program is a three-month-long program. And you would apply the same way that you would apply for the workshop. So you need to go to our website, fill out an application. And we only receive, though, these long-term applications 3 months out of the year. And that's February, May, and September. And I have to say quickly that if anyone is, in fact, interested in studying with us on a long-term basis, that you need to apply immediately, because our long-term program is filling up quickly. I know we're only in the second month of the year now, February, but we have seen an outpouring of interest in our work and what we're doing here. And so there are a lot of people who are applying for the long-term program. And for more details, again, you can just go to our website, calearth.org. There's plenty of information about what we teach in our workshops. There's plenty of information about how to get in touch with us if you're interested in the long-term program. Actually, you would probably, if you are interested in the long-term program, you would want to contact Ian, and he is in charge of our long-term program as the site director here at CalEarth. And he can be contacted via email at ian@calearth.org. If you have any questions, if your listeners have any questions about our workshop and what's involved and what we teach and what they can expect, they can contact me, and I can be reached via email at bridget@calearth.org.
Great, thank you. And Brad, could you go over how people can contact you?
Well, our two websites are set up. There's tinytexashouses.com, and there's puresalvageliving.com, and that's actually just getting set up. The idea is to create a membership, and so people can actually sign on there, and we're getting a newsletter out. I can't say I am anywhere near as organized as it sounds like they are out at CalEarth. And I would love to have that sort of organization here at this point, but we're still in earlier stages of developing the infrastructure on the standpoint of a corporate level. We're moving out of the house building and into this other stage of it as we can, but the funding, and I'm sure they're finding the same issues, there isn't really a lot of funding that you go out there and tap. I don't want the government's help, so I'm not going out there asking for any of theirs, and I just assume they stay out of my business for as long as possible because they're never going to be a help at this point. They're actually keeping the system in place. So getting hold of us through those two sites, emailing me off of that site, and I'll pass it on to one of the people that are working here, Tim, who's great help, is going to be possibly contacting him. And it's all bwk@tinytexashouses.com. That would get you to me. And I'll pass it on to some of the great people who have come on board recently. And I agree with them. All of a sudden, there is a almost like an upwelling. I believe very much in this global consciousness. I believe we're about to thrive. I think there are solutions. I do not by any means think it's over with. The game is not done. And I think people are recognizing that it's going to be that individual choice that makes a difference, and they're willing to now do that as a wake-up call.
Well, I must agree with you. I don't mean to cut you off here, but we're running out of time. But I appreciate all three of you. You've been an inspiration. I think we have three different levels there. CalEarth is well organized and raring to go. They've been doing it for a while. Brad, sounds like you are right on that path. And then you have me just starting out trying to copy you guys. So that's what it takes, is all that inspiration and just be working, I think, in a small way to help this world one person at a time, take care of the earth, and share our surplus with each other. So thanks for all your information today, folks. That's the show for this week. In 2 weeks, February 25th, we're going to have, this will be an interesting show, and hopefully anybody listening today will join us. It's going to be all about the new economics. I'm going to have Nicholas Katcher from the New Economic Institute, Bill Summers from Permaculture Credit Union in Santa Fe, and Anthony Chiravallo. I hope I said your name right, Anthony, if you're listening. And he's got a beautiful blog website about social entrepreneurship. Thanks again, folks. Ian, Bridget, Brad.
Cheers. Cheers.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, take care, and hopefully have you on the show if you'd like in the future.
Keep up the good work.
Sounds good. Right. Good luck to you, Brad.
Thank you, and hopefully get in touch. We'll get a chance to talk with each other more.
All right, okay. Take care. Folks, last week I mentioned of a possible new show. Same time, but alternate Saturdays. And that is going to happen. The Urban Farm Show will begin March 17th, and it's going to be hosted by Bridget Van Dolf. And that show is dedicated to farming practices, health, spiritual patterns, and more. So it's in the works, a weekly show to cover all the aspects of our conscious awareness to care for people, care for earth, and share surplus. Adios.